You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world-famous Comedy Cellar. Coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog and the Riotcast Podcast Network. How do you do? I am here still in quarantine, Dan Natterman, with Noam Dworman, owner of the world-famous Comedy Cellar, and Periel Ashenbrand, who is the producer of Live from the Table. And Aruba Ray Ellen is with us. He is a recurring, I wouldn't call him a regular, but a recurring guest on Live from the Table. How are you, Aruba Ray Ellen?
I'm good, Dan. Noam, Periel, great to see you all as always. Wish it was in person instead of online, but this is pretty good nonetheless.
Aruba Ray has a full beard, gray, white, Santa Claus-esque beard. I feel it ages him. Periel disagrees and think it looks good. So we'll have to agree to disagree.
I prefer to listen to Periel. As an attractive woman, I value an attractive woman's opinion much more than yours. But yeah, I mean, I do wish the chin. I started getting white in my chin when I was about 23, 24 years old. I wish it was darker, but it is.
Really? That young?
The hair is dark. And I haven't been going to salon because there's no salons open.
Noam, any thoughts on the beard before we get into weightier discussion?
Noam looks so irritated, and we're 30 seconds in.
You know what? I'm not using my Yeti mic. I pulled it up. Let me transfer to the Yeti mic. Nobody told me my sound was bad.
I'm in my childhood bedroom, by the way.
Okay, now I'm on the Yeti mic. That should change the game.
Oh, much better.
Noam, it looks like he's in terrible pain.
I'm just relaxing on the beach. I'm enjoying it. Listen, I'm just, you know, we have bad news today. The New York postponed phase three indefinitely.
Oh, right. That is horrible.
I didn't hear about that. What's phase three consist of?
Indoor dining, which would have allowed us to have comedy.
And that's been postponed till when?
Poof, up in smoke. Poof, indefinitely.
Oh, Jesus.
A lot of states that it's, yeah, no, that's a huge bummer. I'm sorry to hear that, Noam.
Yeah.
It sucks. It does suck.
It does suck.
What exactly are we waiting for to open things up? I mean, we've discussed this again and again. You know, are we waiting for the virus to go away completely? Because that's not going to happen. You know, as long as one person has it, as soon as we go back, this whole thing started from one person. So why would it not, the same thing not happen? Again,
they're spiking. The numbers are skyrocketing. I mean, they're just surging through the roof. People have been gallivanting around.
That wasn't the question. The question is this whole thing started from one person? So at what point, when we open it up, of course it's going to spike and it's going to come back. I mean, unless we get rid of the damn thing entirely.
It seems like if we would...
Or there's a vaccine.
If we would wear masks... I'm tired of saying already for months already. If we wear masks, then the R naught would stay probably, they say, would stay below one.
And by R naught, you mean because not everybody has studied this as assiduously as Noam.
Well, I'll pause for a second so they can Google.
We could do that, or you could.
Now that everybody knows that the R naught is the rate of transmission. If it's above one, it means that you're giving that the. If it was two, let's say, it means every person who has it gives it to two people. So that would be, you know, that's then it grows exponentially. If it's below one, then it begins to wane and heads towards zero. And if it hovers around one, it just kind of stays static. But you know, if people are walking around without masks, I mean, everybody's let us down. The president didn't order everybody wear masks. The New York is, you know, they're suggesting masks, but they're not serious about it. And I've been out and, you know, I just see people all the time not wearing masks. And then, I mean, it does seem like New York might have some kind of burgeoning herd immunity because we're not spiking. Maybe we're, it's like 25% or so of the, or 20 to 25% of New Yorkers already have the antibodies. So that has to throttle down how the R naught in some way, because every one out of every five or one out of every four people is not capable, ostensibly not capable of being spread to. So I don't know.
Well, the question that is on everybody's mind is, how does this affect Aruba Ray? Aruba Ray, as you know, as regular listeners know, has a comedy club on the island of Aruba. That's why they call him Aruba Ray. But he normally goes twice a year, I guess. But normally he would be there now, I gather. But he's
normally
not.
Be there three big chunks a year. Just to follow up on something Noam said. You know, from what I read in the Times, it says that despite all the protesting, there wasn't really a big spike. And they said maybe because it was outdoors, maybe because certain people were wearing masks, or a lot of people were.
In New York, we doesn't seem to have a spike, but in other places, I mean, look at Los Angeles. I mean,
it's terrible. Well, in Los Angeles, from what my buddy told me who lives there, he said that there's a lot of cases because it's a large population, but the number per 100,000 isn't as big as, say, Texas and Arizona.
No, Los Angeles County is one of the hottest spots per 100,000.
But even there, I've read that even with the number of cases up, the number of hospitalizations and fatalities is not up, or at least.
Well, because it's, right now the average age is much lower. So we're doing the math. I keep forgetting it. It's like 180-year-olds. Hope I don't get this wrong. Could produce as many deaths as 20,000 25-year-olds. Almost nobody dies at 25, and almost everybody, you know, such a high. So, depending on what the average age is, you can have drastically different numbers of deaths. So, yeah, even in Florida, the death count really hasn't spiked yet, but it might. It's a lagging thing, so you don't know.
Like, again, let's get back.
100-year-olds, that's 8,000 years of living. That's 4 2,000-year-old men. Thank you. I'm in my childhood bedroom. I came here to Boston to get out of the city for about a week or so, week and a half. And I went out to eat last night. I've done outdoor dining, and they have indoor dining here, and tables were spaced apart. They had partitions. I was nervous doing it. It was my first time doing it. And somebody came over and they asked us for our name and phone number for contact tracing. And I felt really comfortable. The wait staff was covered up and you weren't near other people. I mean, it was great, and everybody.
Aruba Ray, the people want to know about Aruba.
Okay, so Aruba is opening up to the U.S. July 10th. I'm on the first flight out, 8:30 a.m., 8:50 a.m. flying to Aruba from JFK. When you land in Aruba, you take a COVID test. You pay $75, or you can take a test within 72 hours before you leave your hometown. You're probably not going to get the results in time, but it's obviously not a bulletproof system. When you land there and take the test, you're supposed to stay quarantined for 24 hours till you get the test result. They don't give it to you at the airport, but they need to open up. Their economy has suffered more than anyone else's in the world, according to Standard & Poor's, but that is per capita. So they're opening up, and I'm going to go. I'd love to do shows there. Maybe we could start doing shows July 20th, but maybe 2 days a week, because I think the occupancy rate is only going to be 20% on the whole island. Maybe we'll do shows. I've spoken to some comedians about coming down. They're up for it. Like, they're fine. JetBlue keeps the middle seat empty. So I think there's a comfort level, and, you know, you wear a mask on the plane, and Aruba does testing, and, you know, and you got to move on with your life, but you got to be careful. So, you know, I'm excited to go.
Are you saying that you still get laid with that beard?
Well,
slightly unrelated question.
There's a lot of people that don't seem to mind the beer. Now, I'm not getting laid right now because it's COVID times. And in COVID times, I'm too paranoid. But will I get on a plane and go hang out in the beaches of Aruba and take a swim in the crisp, clear blue waters? Yes, I will. But as far as my beer goes, Aruba doesn't have any coronavirus. So maybe I will get laid in Aruba. Probably
not. It's about to have a lot of coronavirus. That plan sounds cockamamie.
It's not perfect, but you gotta, you know, what are you gonna do? You're testing everyone who's coming in. Other islands have had disastrous results, but they weren't testing, you know?
Yeah, but they're testing, but what are they doing? Then they're saying, okay, you don't have to quarantine for 2 weeks once you get there.
No, correct.
I mean, are they enforcing any of this?
If your test is positive, you then have to go to a one specific hotel, sort of a COVID hotel. So everyone knows this when they're going down, but so they know there's a risk. Your vacation could be...
That hotel is called Passion COVID.
You know, it's possible. You know, it could be really screwy, but...
Tell me how many people you think are actually going to take themselves over to COVID hotel.
I think it's understood. You have to. It's part of the, you go on the website before you even get on the plane. You've agreed to all this because you upload your information and your passport information on Aruba.com. So not ArubaComedy.com, Aruba.com. So I think, look, it's not a foolproof plan, but I'm excited to go, and it probably will be, you know, won't be a very busy time, but you get a great deal and the beaches will be empty and hopefully there'll be two nights a week of comedy. But we'll see.
Aruba Ray has a pat, you know, Periel, one thing I got to say about Aruba Ray is he's a man with many passions. Aruba is one of those passions. Young girls would be another passion. Old women would be another passion.
Define young.
I define young. Well, how would you define young?
I don't know. Me? 30.
But what I was getting at is that Ray, he likes young, he likes old, he likes right in the middle. He is very eclectic in his...
Well, I appreciate, I appreciate that. Let's be clear. This is not a Chris D'Elia situation with Ray Allen. I'm respectful of women, just to be very clear. Grew up with all women, love women, wonderful people. Periel's a woman. I'm a big fan of hers.
What did Chris D'Elia do exactly?
I don't know. I don't want to sneer and disparage Chris D'Elia.
Based on the accusation, it just sounds like he was just kind of creepy and overly aggressive, but I don't think he committed a crime as far as I know, and I don't think he's been charged with a crime. It's just social media has tried him.
Isn't it a crime? How old were the girls? I don't know the story.
Apparently he released the full email exchange, and there was a girl who, when she said, "Hey, I'm 16," he was like, "Oh, I didn't know that. Goodbye." He, I guess, thought she was older. So there's several.
Is that what he thought, she was older, or he just don't ask, don't tell?
He claimed that
she was older, or she was too, or 16 was too old.
No, I think he thought she was older, and
I don't know. I don't really know the story.
Yeah, but he didn't. You know, I don't.
It seems he made every effort to keep it legal.
Yeah, correct. As far as I read, I've read whatever Dan has read. I mean,
I'm so fatigued of people, you know, getting ruined now. I find myself looking for reasons to defend people even I don't want to defend. I mean, obviously, I mean, I have a daughter. You shouldn't be creeping around on the internet with 16-year-old girls, whether it's a crime or not.
Right. But supposedly he didn't know, to be totally fair. He had no clue.
I shouldn't say. I don't know. I mean,
look, it's possible. Look at the number of people who go to bars that are under 18, and you know they look.
I had a teacher in high school. I won't mention his name. He was my freshman year English teacher, and so he was also the school cheerleading coach. And he used to say to the girls, like, you know, "Hey, Susan, looking good in that skirt." To kids in my class that were 14 years old. He was probably in his 30s. He had a beard, not unlike you, Ray, gray beard. And we used to say, "Mr. DeFeo, that's perverted." And he would say, "That's not perverted. If I said to Dan, 'You look good,' that'd be perverted." So he mixed a little bit of homophobia in with it. But the truth is, nobody really thought it was that. I mean, it's like, yeah, Susan did look good in that skirt. At least in my mind.
Was Susan upset?
Susan's not the real name, by the way. No, Susan was just like, "Mr. DeFeo."
Susan was definitely creeped out by that.
Well, I don't know about that. He was a popular teacher. I had another teacher in 11th grade who I heard the rumor, and I'm pretty sure it's true, but he told a girl, "Close your legs, it smells in here." Now, he was...
Wow.
But that was, he was like an older guy. Everybody, he lived alone.
Then that makes it fine.
And he was like, he showed up drunk once or twice to like graduation party. He was like one of those teachers that it was kind of like tried to be, you know, friends with the students, I guess. But he was the most popular teacher in school.
I'll bet he was.
He didn't fuck nobody. He just, you know, but
And to be fair, when he wasn't teaching, he worked in his family's fish market. So he knew the sense.
That is so appalling.
Look, I've said this before. When Woody Allen, I wish it wasn't Woody Allen, but it was. When Woody Allen had that movie Manhattan, one of the main plot lines was that he was 40 approximately in that movie, and he had a 17-year-old girlfriend. And he brought the girlfriend with him to dinner with his friends, whatever. Oh, she's 17. And as I recall, I should probably double check this, of all the reviews of that movie, Pro and Con, nobody identified the fact that he had a 17-year-old girlfriend as being, you know, over the line. It was just kind of like, you know, he had a 17-year-old girlfriend. It's, times have changed.
Now, literature is replete. Is that the right word? No, I'm replete with those sorts of things. You remember the movie Lost in Translation? That wasn't literature, but that was an older Bill Murray and a 20-something Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. You know, and they didn't have any sex, I don't think, but there sort of was the implication that they were kind of falling in love. And, you know, there was a movie, Ghost World, with Steve Buscemi and Scarlett Johansson, which I think had a similar theme there. It's sort of an old literary kind of a thing, the older guy and the younger girl, without saying whether it's good or bad. It seems to be a theme that recurs.
So I think it's bad because we realize now that it puts women who are not mature at that age on a path towards getting themselves in situations where they foreclose options in their lives that they wouldn't want to. I think that's a big part of it. And they get pregnant, whatever it is, and they end up not having careers or being older. What it's not, so I would be very upset if my daughter at 16, 17, you know, was with
and
a guy. Guys,
old boyfriend showed up with
30 or even a guy in his 20s. You know, anybody, I don't want her to go out with anybody who's not like another teenager in high school, right?
Right.
But having said that, they do very sloppily call it pedophilia, and it's not. I mean, it's not pedophilia. I mean, it's not being attracted to a young prepubescent girl. It's being attracted to a young woman who looks very often not different than she's going to look 3 weeks later when she all of a sudden turns legal, right? The pedophilia word, I think, adds an extra layer to it, which is not fair, really. It's just you shouldn't be doing that. It is illegal. Some places think about this. Some places the age of consent is 15. Some places it's 14. Some places it's 17. Some places it's 19. This is not, how do you say something is horribly immoral unless you do it across the bridge in that state, in which case it's perfectly okay. So I don't think we're that precise about how we feel about it. And of course, all the famous rock stars did it constantly with 13-year-olds, and then they're still welcome guests on every evening talk show. So, you know,
I think the problem here is the sexualization of girls. And when you're 15 years old, you're a girl. Even if you look 17 or 18, your brain is not fully developed. And right. 30-something-year-old guys should not be trying to fuck you.
Well, that's what I said. They're not mature. But
you missed the obvious joke there, Noam, that Periel's brain is still not fully developed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't mind that. But I'm saying
when I was 15, I was totally happy to fuck 30-year-old guys. No, I'm just kidding.
So, I mean, in the old days, Elvis had a young girlfriend, and Charlie Chaplin had a young girlfriend. And my God, Jerry Seinfeld had a 17-year-old girlfriend the day before yesterday. And you know, it was like, oh. But nobody's like, you're a monster, Jerry Seinfeld. Okay, she wasn't 16, she was 17. But we're really splitting hairs there, right? So, like a lot of things in today's day and age, we're imposing our new wisdom onto things and acting as if, how could anybody ever see this differently? Despite the fact that, you know, I don't know, 100,000 years of human history has seen it differently. And, you know.
Right. Well,
Scarlett O'Hara was, I think, 16 when Rhett Butler encountered her at 12 Oaks at the the Wilkes plantation.
Scarlett O'Hara was not beautiful, but men seldom noticed when caught in her charms, as the Tarleton twins were.
That is the opening chapter of Gone with the Wind, where Margaret Mitchell says that Scarlett O'Hara was not beautiful. And then she then proceeds to spend the next 1,100 pages talking about how every guy wanted to fuck Scarlett O'Hara.
Because she did something.
Yeah, she was hot, and I dismissed the first paragraph as a mistake.
No, Dan.
To me, that first paragraph was a typo, as far as I'm concerned. Scarlett was hot. Men don't fall all over themselves to get at a chick that's not hot because she has something.
You know, I never saw the movie, and it looks like I'll never get the chance.
You should see the movie. The movie is very, I mean, it does in a way, I get the complaint with Gone with the Wind that it Disney-fies slavery or something. But on the other hand, I saw Gone with the Wind with Rosalind, and Rosalind's black, and this is years ago, and she found it very easy to separate the Hollywood from.
Well, Rosalind is very, very, her opinions, and we have had her on. Her opinions almost always go against the main current of black thought.
No, but not, this is years ago. This is when she was in her 20s, and other people too. I mean, I'm not telling anybody to watch it or not. I mean, you think about it, that the people in Hollywood who made that movie at the time were, as always, Hollywood, or on the left edge of popular thought, and Hattie McDaniel won an Academy Award for it. And but yeah, of course, slavery couldn't have been like that.
Well, no, I mean, but again, you have to put into context when the movie was made. What was it made? 1939?
39, yeah.
And that's how people were depicted back then. No,
I have to say, but I did some research. It was criticized even at that time.
Oh, really?
For putting like a Vaseline on the lens of slavery. Even at the time, people recognized that. So it's a legitimate beef. I mean.
So do you pull it from the shelves? I mean, the movie from the.
Well, I mean, listen, there was a movie, Life is Beautiful.
Yeah.
And that was criticized for kind of funning and gaming concentration camps, right? Yeah. Holocaust. Yeah. And of course, it did do that.
Yeah.
But it's still six. But you know, as a Jew, it didn't offend me that it did that. It was what it was, you know. But I couldn't. I'm sure other people were quite offended by that. Maybe Survivor is even more so. So it's a very personal reaction. I don't judge any, I wouldn't criticize anybody's reaction to it. I think it's true. Gone with the Wind does that. But I don't think it crosses the line into disparaging black people. Although the character of Kizzy is a little over the top, you know. I don't know. But it is, you know, it's a shame because on so many other levels, it's a great piece of movie making, you know. It's a great story.
Well, it's like The Merchant of Venice. Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice wasn't particularly, I mean, this is going back a few more years, but yeah. I haven't read it in a while, but I recall thinking it was pretty good. And that doesn't cast Jews in the best light, but you know, but people understand that it was written in Elizabethan England, and you know, and
well, how about, have you seen like your, is with Alec Guinness on the, yeah, with playing Fagin in one of the earlier movies of Oliver Twist, with a big prosthetic nose, and he's just Jewy as can be, and you know, it's clearly. And how about Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ? I mean, come on,
it still happens now all the time, where they really make somebody look incredibly Jewy. Even on Game of Thrones, the guy from the bank, they didn't say it, but I mean,
from the bank.
Yeah, the banker. The money lender.
People don't perceive podcast. That.
What are you?
I said, even just this podcast.
By the way, we have, we're going to really switch gears in just a couple of minutes because we have 80s pop star Taylor Dane is about to join us.
Is she Jewish?
Ray's all excited.
Yes, she is.
She is, but I don't want to get too into that. This show is Jewy enough as it is.
Oh, she started in the Russian clubs, didn't she?
Is that true? That's interesting.
Ask her about that. She'll be, Perriel, when is she joining us?
She's joining us at 7:30. I would like to point out that you guys are also, while you're at it, missing one of the greatest works of literature of the past easily 50, 60 years, which of course is Nabokov's Lolita.
I don't know if you pronounce it Nabokov, but
Nabokov, right?
I can promise you.
Rhyme with fuck off.
I've never heard it pronounced that way. You may be the only one that's right, and that's certainly
Nabokov.
No, it's not. It's Nabokov.
And well, you might want to tell Sting that.
Anything.
Because he sings that in his song.
Well, Sting sings Nabokov, but I've heard it pronounced Nabokov by English professors and various people. But you may be right, or maybe that's the Russian pronunciation.
But in any event.
What did Philip Roth call Nabokov when he was naked?
No, but I mean, she was, what, 12, 13?
No, Lolita, I think, which is, by the way, the novel Lolita is how, this is relating to our earlier conversation, Pearl. You're a conversation too late because we were talking about racial stuff, and now you're getting back to the underage girl stuff. But I believe Lolita from the novel Lolita, which is how we get the word Lolita, was, I believe, 13-ish. Did you say 13, 14? I'm not sure, but...
And he was how old?
Well, but he wasn't the good guy, though. He was not portrayed as the hero. Humbert.
Yeah.
Was, I guess, in his 30s or something, played by James Mason in the original film.
You know, as long as we're jumping around conversations, the Merchant of Venice, I believe he sold fish.
Taylor Dane is here.
Taylor Dane, okay, so we'll have to.
Bye.
Obviously, we're not going to discuss these matters with Taylor unless it's something that
is. You guys take the lead because I'm a 70s guy.
Well, but you're a musician.
All right.
You're a musician.
Pitch to be a Taylor Dane guy right now.
She's wonderful. I haven't met her. I've seen her on a Ray Ellen did a Zoom with her, and she was very quite pleasant.
Hey.
Hey.
This is Taylor. Oh, hi, Taylor. How do you do?
How do you do?
Well, I'm fine. This is everybody. Taylor Dane is joining us from.
Hey.
I don't know from where, but California, maybe. I'm not sure.
California, CA. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Taylor. I'm Dan Natterman. I'm a comedian at the Comedy Cellar.
I can tell.
Noam Dorman is the man that is with the beach behind him, and he is the owner.
Oh, wow.
He's also
is that real or fake?
Fake.
It's a real
fake. Well, one can dream. Looks good.
Noam's a musician himself. He never got to the top 40 like you did.
Top 20 is the aim.
Well, I think you had some top five stuff back then.
Top five, you're right. You're right.
Noam never got quite there.
I love it.
But he's still plugging, and God bless him. We wish him well. Pearl Ashenbrand is the producer of the show, and she's an on-air personality. And she reminds me, Taylor, a bit of you. She's a very, very outspoken, woman. She doesn't sing, though. But and then me, Dan Adam. Anyway, how are you? I know Ray Ellen. You know Ray. You did a Zoom with Ray.
You were on my the show we did a few Fridays ago. The Aruba show. You sang on it, and
I loved it.
Yeah, that was fun.
Comedy. I'm good at comedy. I love my comedy, and you guys have had some great guests on this show. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for thinking of me.
Well, why not? You know, I'm from the '80s. You had to remember that
but
I'm.
Like, can we just discuss this view right here?
What view?
The behind you.
Oh no, that's not real. That's also fake. I don't live in the Hollywood Hills, but
not with a grand white piano behind you, like Prince and shit. No,
no, that's just something I found online. I could change it, you know.
I'd rather believe that you would like dip. You're living the Gaga life.
You're in Los Angeles.
I'm in LA right now. Yeah, my girlfriend's apartment here. That she's a manager that wants me to like plug her. Yeah, Jan, let me plug you right now.
Okay.
She's a jazz musician's manager who says, I'm 1%. I represent the 1% of all the managers in the world, and I'm struggling. I need to work. But she represents some of the greatest she manages some of the greatest, the 1% of the 1% of the musicians in the world, and she has no work. Unbelievable. No, Christian Sands. Who else do you manage? Keon Harrell, the greatest trumpeter living right now. Christian Sands, greatest. So anyway, we're just hanging here, bullshitting, talking about music.
As a comedian, I've always said that music people to me, because I just, it's a language. Like a joke, I can tell you, logically understand how jokes work. Music is like something I cannot do. And so to me, musicians is like this land of mystery that I find endlessly fascinating because it's something that's not my world.
And we find you just as fascinating and mysterious and compelling to watch, like a bad accident, the same way you find us.
Dan Natterman is very fascinating, and you should, and he is an accident. Yes.
You know what? I had a couple of questions that I always want to know about pop stars, but I never meet them. First of all, now when you're listening to Sirius or whatever on the radio, and one of your songs comes on. Do you turn it up and say, yeah, that's great? Or do you switch the channel and say, I don't need to hear this?
If I'm by myself, if I'm in a car, I'll always turn it up for a minute and just hold my heart and just go, this is a sign, you know, it's always a sign. You have to take it in and do that moment and just take a breath and take a breath. And it's a blessing, you know, it is a blessing, right? And then change the channel. I don't sit with it the whole song and go, oh, you know, like, you know, I wish I had Kanye's, you know, self-exploitation love. But I do take that moment. I do. And I always look at it like a sign. It's a beautiful thing. If I'm with friends, oh, my Lanta, they're like, turn it on 20. They're amping it. And I'm like, oh, everybody party. You know, I can't even tell you. I get calls all the time where they got it on 20 and you just go with it, man, because they're just overjoyed. And that's what music is, right? Brings people together. They're overjoyed. I can't ever stop that bus. You just ride with the train, baby. Bam, 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 bam.
Are there any particular parts, performances, or your performance or someone else's performance on a record which you were never quite happy with, and every time you hear it, you're reminded of like shit, I wish I had sung that a little differently? Or,
oh my God, do you remember even the beginning of I'll Always Love You? And they're like, you know how hard that is to hit sometimes? And they're like, do that part. So I'm like, and even live, you can't even start. Once you hit those three notes, they're like, oh, we know what song that is. Hell yeah. And I'm like, all right, we got to do it. My keyboard player's like, don't start the song. I'm like, oh, that's yeah. And I'll even do it to him. It's like, you can't start Love Will Lead You Back without the ding, 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 ding. I'm like, I'm not starting it. Just like, do, do, do. You better hit those chords before I get into that song. Say goodbye. No. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, yeah. So it goes both ways.
How does that process work when, like, you know, somebody writes a song and then you ultimately sing the song? And how does that get together with the song? Like, a writer writes a song and she's thinking, I want to write this specifically for you. Or she shops it around. How does that
process? Very interestingly, I just had this conversation because this beautiful moment after 30 years, but actually Diane Warren. So you, from God's ears to your mouth right now, I just had this conversation in the middle of singing this for Diane Warren and Clive Davis 3 days ago on Richard Weiss, who you all might know. He has this insane quarantine charity event that he holds every weekend, and he's been giving back and holding this Zoom call that has raised almost $5 million. And it's been extraordinary, a private call that he's been doing, and usually 1,000 people participate and get on this private call that he's set up in a Zoom call. And Clive was on it, and it was for Broadway Cares this last week, and he had one set up with the original cast of Hamilton got on Friday night, and this was on Saturday, and Diane was on the call, and I was on the call, and it was my time to sing, and I sang Love Will Lead You Back, and Clive was talking, and he said, after I finished singing Love Will Lead You Back, it almost brought tears to my eyes. I sang it a cappella, and Diane went on to tell how she remembers bringing the song into Clive at the bungalow and talking about the song and how she was bringing it in for Whitney. It's a song, but she was bringing it in. Clive thought it was for Whitney, and she said, no, I want Taylor to sing this. This is for her voice. It is for her to sing. This was in 1992. 91, The Bodyguard had just come out, 92. It was right around there because I put it out on my second album, Can't Fight Fate. And that was right about that time. And I remember it didn't go out on The Bodyguard, but, you know, Unbreak My Heart was one of her other treasured, but Love Will Lead You Back. And he said, I think it's great for Whitney, but you're right. It is good for Taylor. I love it for her voice. Wow. And I remember being in the room with him and listening to this record and just hearing these notes and just listening to the, you know, saying goodbye is never an easy thing, but you never said this, you'd stay forever. So if you must go, darling, I'll set you free. But I know in time we'll be together. It's crazy lyrics. And only Diane could say something so simplistic with the same, you know, do, 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 do. It's just chromatically, it's a scale. It's just incredible. Anyway, so they both said it at the same time, and yet for Whitney, for Taylor, and it just you know, it was right after Every Beat of My Heart. It was just magical. And it just went to number one right after that.
I mean,
just,
if for any listeners that may not know the name Diane Warren, she's, you know, written pretty much everything. I mean, she's...
Well, she's definitely one of our treasures, you know? She's written, one of our American top songwriters, Tom Petty.
Also, she wrote...
Bob Dylan, you know?
She wrote Don't Want to Miss a Thing for Aerosmith, which is... I don't, you wouldn't
necessarily... She also wrote Unbreak My Heart.
Diane Warren. Did she also write... did she write... I can look this up... for Bon Jovi, It's My Life, was that her?
I don't know.
Was there ever a song that almost went to somebody else that was, well, that you said was going to go to Whitney, but was there ever a situation where it was like a close call where this song would have gone to another artist and then you ended
up? Not that I'm aware of, no.
Is there a song that you're always have to sing for whatever reason because your fans love it and you're just sick of it? Like you're just tired of the song?
Don't Rush Me.
Don't Rush Me.
By the way, it wasn't Diane Warren that wrote I Made a Mistake, but she's written 80 trillion songs. And
80 trillion. And she also wrote I'll Be Your Shelter, which is a fan favorite over and over and over again. Huge in Australia, huge in Philippines. Like, you just, huge.
And you enjoy it? Are happy to sing that song for people that want to hear it?
Me? Yeah. You remember that song?
Of course I do. It's my favorite Taylor Dane song.
I'll Be Your Shelter, right?
Yeah.
There's clouds hanging in your sky and they're just not letting any light in. And you feel like you'd like to give in. Don't you give up so soon. What you need is a friend to count on. What you got, baby, you got someone who will stay when the rain is falling. Won't let it fall on you. I'll see you through. I'll cover you with a love. With a love so deep. Yes, and people and artists do forget their fucking lyrics. With a love so deep and warm and true, I will be there. Oh, honey, I'll be your shelter. I'll be the one to take you through the night.
Night.
Whatever you need, shelter. You gonna do the na-nas? I'll make everything all right. Make everything all right. Yeah, na 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 na. Keep going.
Yay!
You are a cute groupie. I like you. Look how cute he is.
Well, thank you so much. My neighbors can probably hear me singing na na na, but okay. I'm sure they love you too. Because we're all at home and these walls are thin. This isn't my real house, as I said. I'm just in a New York City apartment.
Dan's flustered.
I thought she was singing for me. And that those songs were my college year songs. And I had a lonely college experience, but we won't get into that. But at least I had the music.
Yeah, of course. Of course, music gets us through. Has any of you traveled yet or gone out or...
I left New York. I'm in Boston right now, my childhood bedroom. Very exciting.
Wow.
But okay. That's about it. I'm going to Aruba on July 10th when they open up. I'm going first thing in the morning, July 10th. Come on down, Taylor, if you want.
Wow. Your friend's there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, his name is Aruba Ray. He has a show in Aruba.
That's true. I remember, well, I know his friend's there, but I mean, but you like, you have a place to stay, you know what you're doing, you go to see him?
Oh, yeah. I have a place to
stay. Taylor. Is it open there? Is it open?
They'll open July 10th, the Friday, July 10th.
Will?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody has
Taylor, to. You may not, I hope you don't remember. You one time got very angry with me. I know you don't think you've ever met me before, but first of all, you stole one of my musicians. You stole, I'm teasing.
Does that sound like me, Jan?
Do you remember she used to sing background for you, Vivian Sesums?
Yeah, Vivian, of course.
Yeah, so Vivian used to be my band, and she left my band to go tour with you.
Really?
And
what band would that have been? You mean me or Joe Cocker or, you know, let me go on with the list of people she sings with.
No, prior to that, she used to work at the Cafe Wa.
Oh, but she went on to bigger, better things, honey.
Oh, I know. We're still friends. And... So, but you came down to the Wawa night, and I didn't know you were there. And I was making I used to tease Vivian like that because Vivian would always try to, I don't know how to put it, but anyway, I would tease Vivian.
Vivian is like extraordinary people. Yeah. But let's just keep this. The Cafe Wa had extraordinary musicians, and everybody, you know, played at the Wa when they were off tour. Just don't even start with me.
Yeah, so you can. So I used to tease Vivian that she would actually go. She would go on tour with Taylor Dane, but she would sing the songs. And it was just me teasing Vivian, and it had nothing to do with you. God forbid. It was really just me teasing Vivian. And you were there, and you heard me say this, and I didn't know you were there. And you came on stage, and you said, "This guy's a fucking asshole." Do you remember?
I did.
You grabbed the mic, and I felt so bad. I was like, "No, it was. No. I was kidding around with Vivian."
I probably said it two drinks deep and definitely as a Jew from Long Island. I didn't say it seriously. I'm sure.
I think page six wrote it up and I tried to find it today, but you know, they don't have, it's pre-digital. And ever since then, I was like, oh God, I hope I never have to cross paths with Taylor Dane again. And then they told me, oh, Taylor Dane. I said, I hope she doesn't remember. But anyway, it was nice.
Let me hear how Bette Midler says, this guy's a fucking asshole. That's how I talk. It's very New York with a bit of Jewish from Long Island. So don't
you started in the Russian clubs, right? Did you start in the Russian clubs?
No, I started in bands. I started all throughout New York. I landed in a Russian club on the weekend to pay the bills. But right. I mean, that was really what helped me pay to work with Rick in the studio.
Dan has landed in many Turkish baths, similar but different.
Yeah, so just one more thing.
It helped me pay to make Tell It to My Heart. It helped me pay for the 12 inches I was doing.
Taylor, just do me one favor. Tell Dan and Ray and Periel again that my band in the Cafe Wa was extraordinary, had great musicians in it, right?
Dude, Cafe Wa, those bands have all, they're it's notorious. They had the best musicians down there playing in there. They still do. Everybody knows it. You go on Monday nights to the Wa, Tony Minaj, all those people, they creep in the Wa. That's what they do. It's a notorious band in there. That's it.
Of course, Noam's no longer there, but
But those are all the people I hired, and I used to play with. I used to lead.
Totally, he did 100%. If that's who you were hiring that band, it was either Monday night or Tuesday night. That's the band. The house band was ridiculous.
Taylor, do you ever show up at like go to like a small venue just unannounced for fun and just kind of?
Yeah, there's a place in Boston I show up to and do that too. Here and there, it depends, but not much anymore. But just depends.
That's awesome. Where in Boston? Which place?
Willie's.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm coming from New York. How long are you in Boston for?
Just two more days.
I'm there the 9th.
Oh, shit.
Are you flying? Shit. Are you in California?
Yeah.
And you're flying?
Yeah.
Why?
Hazmat suit?
Very
up. Viral? Are people going to know this shit on the 9th that I'm coming to Boston?
I hope. Boston, I've been going out here in Boston, and everyone's been good. They're wearing masks.
Everybody's going to know I might go to Willie's on the 9th. Scratch that. Edit.
I can. If you want me to, I will.
I don't think I'll go to Willie's on the 9th.
People, what were you going to
say? Boy, wouldn't that be a shitstorm? But I don't think that – no bars are open. Who are we kidding?
No, things are – in Boston, places are open. We've been doing the – I went out the other night, and they
– No way.
Yeah, they're distant. It was good. It was really good.
How was that open?
It's crazy.
Massachusetts has like really low corona right now. So
I thought they had high corona. Well, no, the corona is here and thriving. It's time to get the hell out of L.A.
Yeah, L.A.'s bad.
That would be a good out. That would be a good Weird Al Yankovic song, Ray. High corona.
Time to get the hell out of L.A.
High corona.
Time to say our goodbyes and say ole, L.A.
Hey Taylor, I have a question for you. I don't know. What did when you started out? Was everything recorded to click tracks back then? In the 90s.
Click tracks.
What's a click track? No.
Like, was a tempo? Were you playing? Were you playing?
Trick question.
No. I'm just wondering, how you feel about recording to music that's bound to a tempo with a click, as opposed to like bands that used to just play free.
Oh,
you feel any difference with that?
I honestly don't remember.
You don't remember. No. How about when you play live? Does the band sync to a click to get the tempos the same way every night, or?
No.
No.
Not even a chance. I use sometimes I honestly certain tracks I have to use track. I have to, and do I use inner ear? Sometimes when it's consistently on tour, I will use inner ear, and sometimes I won't. I'll actually use floor wedges. I still do it. I'm old school. It's hurt my ears to some degrees. I have to be honest with you. I mean, I'm still kind of old school. And on other levels, I do have to get inner ears. And I mean, we've talked about it. I've talked to my ENTs about it. And like, I just have to use tracks. I have to do more high end for me that I can hear it. And I just use a more of a high end for my higher end frequencies for me to hear the high end of the track. To be honest, it's not really just click for me.
Yeah, I had a lot of hearing loss too.
That's one of the I really do. I mean, I have to be fair and tell you the truth. So it's just like I'm sitting here going, you know, a star is born. Like I'm more like the old man, you know. I gotta be honest.
Hey, Taylor, what something I've always found amazing is that. So you became so successful and so well known all over the world when you were. I mean, when you were a kid. I mean, you were so young, and
that's how it is, though, isn't it?
What's that? No, but what was that like to be 22 and to be that huge? Did it mess with your head, or was it just exciting, or, you know, how was that? That's a big deal. Some people can't handle it.
You're crazy. Well, that is
part of my management at the time.
What'd you say?
That is how it works with musicians. They're always young. Comedians are generally, by the time we hit our stride, we're in our, I'm 50 now, and I think that I'm about as good as I've ever been, but we typically hit our stride in the 30s.
Right, but I was wondering what Taylor's experience was with that, because...
I was crazy, Jan?
Just a bit, yes.
I don't know what her definition of crazy is, but this is the thing.
But that's why everyone loved you.
I'm more like a man, a guy. I'm more like... I had two brothers growing up. I never had sisters. So I always operated more like in a masculine way. Like I like to be part of the guys. I like to be part of the group. And yet I was very feminine and very sexual, but also very, would you say that's more true?
Yes, very, too true.
I like to be part of the gang.
Edit that out.
Not in an orgy sort of way. I like to be part of the boys. I like that, and to my detriment at times, you know? And I like to be part of it all. So it was hard to face some truths, you know, more in a, like, you can't be part of the boys all the time, because it is a boys club when it comes down to the business, and that you have to learn that the hard way. And it actually hurt me in a lot of levels, that, because, you know, sometimes it works for them and then sometimes it doesn't. And I had to learn that being a woman, you have to keep your power inside. You have to learn. And I grew up, and I grew up, and I owned my womanhood and my power. My mother was a powerful woman, but she also was very vulnerable and weak. So I chose to keep my strength and then honor it and hone in and learn it. But I was a firecracker at 22. I was blowing up. I used my sexuality. You guys saw all that. But I was also using it everywhere. It was explosive. I didn't know how to harness her. I didn't know how to harness all that. And so, yeah, I mean, was it hard? I mean, you didn't see it at first, because it was just, you just saw this rawness. I wasn't taught how to harness her and use that for the long haul. So she kind of exploded a bit. Yeah.
They should read your book.
Yeah, you should read my book. You know, my book is out, right?
I didn't know that.
So yeah, Tell It to My Heart.
Oh, that's how I got
Pardon? Conquered my fear and found my voice. Yes, I wish I had a cover of it in front of you. Yes.
No, you can probably.
I'll bring it up.
Yeah. Thank you, because you saw it, Ray. We discussed it.
Yes.
I love it.
See what this premise of this show is for.
I love a good musician memoir.
My memoir. Yeah.
Everybody.
And my release of my new single is coming out on the 8th. Oh my God. Joanne, you idiot. Joanne Miggs. I'm going to kick your ass, Miggs.
No, it's on there. We have it. We have it. Joanne sent it, and we would not have finished.
This show is awesome. I demand Judd take a look at this. This.
Here we go.
Yes. Norm. Now, does that look like a girl that figured it out a little later? Yes, I think so.
How I lost my shit, conquered my fear, and found my Taylor Day.
So, when you guys were coming out of school at 30, I lost my shit. And Clive will be the first to tell you.
And it was I
was going to see all my friends in all those places I traveled to on buses and tour buses and everything while they were just graduating college and getting their first jobs. And I was like, damn, I already done all this on a tour bus and flew here 100 times. I think I'm going to just go rent a casita in Santa Fe while you guys go to your massage classes. And just tell me where a trailhead is. I'm going to like really see where America now, like, like I've been to Europe 1700 times, but I've never seen it. Like none of it.
Are there any musician memoirs that you've read recently and enjoyed? I just read Bruce Springsteen's autobiography.
I bet you that's interesting. How was it?
Oh yeah, it was really interesting.
Is it honest? Yeah. Is it honest? Yeah,
Bruce is very literary, you know.
He's a poet. Oh, for sure.
Very poetic, and you saw that also with his Broadway show, and he's a storyteller. And
for sure.
You know, he talks about
his book. I always really loved Anthony Kiedis' book. Was truly wow. I couldn't believe how lucid his book was, because considering he was really, really an addict, like. How he could remember, how he had such vivid memories, unless he was just, you know, completely rewriting history. It's possible too, but like, it's unbelievable.
But when you write a book about your life, how much of it do you have to kind of approximate, because you don't remember the details?
Well said, and diplomatically, I might say. Mm. Approximate is a good thing. My storytelling is, I love the imagination of it all. And I will have to say mine is more just guttural and real and just, yeah, I could see Bruce is just literally, he's a poet, right? He's our version. He's our American poet, right? Dylan, our American poets, you know, really beautiful. I would love to be in a car while they tell me what they see, right?
Mm-hmm. Nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Right. Just tell me what you see, like walk in the woods with them. That's it.
You know, speaking of walking in woods, I can't get over the fact that you're a fly fisherman or fisherwoman.
I thought you were going to say I have a tick disease, but
I have a hippie heart, and I don't mean hippie like I want to sit outside and like put paste all over my body. I just, that spirit is what makes me listen to chords more than other people, other girls or whatever. You know, I just have that spirit. You know, I love music. I love when a chord moves and bends. That's why Joni Mitchell, why I hear things. I hear colors when she performs. That's just me, how I hear things.
Who sings that? No, who sings with you?
Poet. What's that?
The Yellow Tax, Big Yellow.
That's Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, you sing that. You do a great, who sings that with your band?
Amanda Brown.
Okay.
She sings with Adele. Well, Adele's kind of semi-retired, but she was singing with Adele, you know.
She was?
Yeah, she was like Adele's number one background singer for a while.
What songs do you do?
No, we would do just like some acoustic stuff with her. We play in the Owl Tree now, but she did a really nice, her version of Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. I played guitar for her.
I just knew you played Big Yellow Taxi. That's neat. No, that's hard stuff to play.
Yeah.
No,
have you done any
Beatles songs? And I always joke with them every Friday. I like say, hey, do you guys know any crazy, but you guys know any Beatles?
Well, they're fun to play, you know, when you're just hanging around. We're not playing, you know, with a very polished band anymore. We're just kind of winging it. So it's, you know, it's what everybody knows.
I sent you a great suggestion.
Real classic jams in there.
What's that?
You forget the Beatles. I mean, you know, I did a Sunday. I was doing Sundays at home, March and April and May. I was doing, and then I just started going to the Beatles. I went into Stevie Wonder songbook for his birthday, you know, and I just was doing that. You know,
it's only Stevie Wonder songs.
Noam, I sent Colin a suggestion for you guys from a song that I heard on the Money Heist soundtrack. Rayon, you're a Money Heist fan.
I do like Money Heist.
It was a song called Broken Coastline. And I thought it would be great for you guys, and Colin never wrote me back. I was slightly insulted, but...
Taylor, who are your? I mean, it's a corny question, but it's actually quite interesting. Who are the singers that you growing up wanted to sing most like? Like Sinatra wanted to sing like Billie Holiday, right? It's a weird answer. Like, where was your head at?
It's weird because even with the British invasion, so at super young, I mean, I heard my first, the first time I was given a radio, right? It was the late 60s and it was Stevie Wonder.
Right.
It was my Sharia Moore, and I just couldn't even understand his chord changes in that. Na, 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 right? It was wild, mind-boggling. And his voice, right, was like just insane. And then you had that British invasion, right? You had these late 60s, right? You had the Beatles, obviously. I just couldn't look at Paul enough without crying. And then all of them. And their music just evolved so incredibly, right? And then you had Marvin Gaye, you had Al Green. This is what moves me to no end. I just did. Aretha was a little later, but you did have these folk musicians. I you know, these were our Buffalo Springfield. That was Stephen Stills. That was, I'm trying to think. It was, everything was on AM radio. Everything was on AM radio. If I really want to get into that, but then you had Build Me Up Buttercup. Those were anything I could play on a 45, right? That was the Foundations, right?
Yeah.
I'm so dizzy. That's the only thing I could play until my parents started getting me records, which was Crosby, Stills and Nash, Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes.
That's great. Do you play an instrument or
I played the flute. They made me play the flute. I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, no.
You and the great Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull.
I tried.
He was great, Jesse. He was a big talent.
I had to walk to school. Don't start with me. So I had to acquire a light instrument. My brother got fucked. He had to play the French horn because he got 100 on the test. He said, my whole life is over. He had to walk like a mile to school with a French horn case. It's like I've never seen anything like it. He started stealing by fourth grade and he put everything in the French horn case. It's just been a terrible life story. Read it. It's in the book.
It was a musical test?
I got screwed. My younger brother's taking it all the way.
It was a musical test?
Yeah. If we were growing up, you had choir and you had a musical instrument.
Do you come from a musical family?
Yeah, ish. Yeah. We were Jews. So the one thing they encouraged was the music.
Right.
And so when I broke off and had a solo by kindergarten, they were like, and then by fourth grade, when I was singing Jacques Brel, they were like,
"Wow!" So you were clearly musical at a young age.
Isn't that always the case, or more often than not the case?
And standing at my window, going, "I've got to get out of here. Let me jump, or if I don't become a star, because clearly this box will save me. Because being in this house and on the windowsill, going, I will get out of here and I will live to be a star. Everybody in this box looks happy and alive and well and rich." And I'll get out of this house alive.
Sound like Ray Allen.
Watch my TED Talk, 2016. When you see the TED Talk, it's a 12-minute version of the whole book. There you go. That was the impetus of the book. And then you'll understand.
Well, we don't want people to watch the TED Talk in lieu of reading your book.
But it's a short, people have attention span and that. So you know what I'm saying. So I'm just saying, if you want to go jump to that and you don't want to read the book, then you read the book, because then you'd be more like, oh, maybe we want to hang on to Taylor a little longer. Because this is music in the TED Talk. I even sing in that, but not a lot. See, because it really is more, I actually did a talk, but I put a little bit of my younger self into my musical, like honestly, I was in love with the Carpenters as a child.
Oh, my God. Me too.
Karen Carpenter was the most purest voice.
And those records are really good. I mean, they're...
Oh, my God. Close to You is one of my top 10 songs of all time.
I must say, Rainy Days and Mondays just kind of gives me the blues. But
they get you down?
Does get me down. That song does get me down. But I like a lot of their other stuff. But...
What about that one song Luther Vandross covered? What is that song called?
Long ago.
Superstar. Don't you remember you told me love me, baby?
Ooh.
What a song.
Taylor's great a cappella. She's the real thing. You know, a lot of these stars nowadays, you know, you turn off the electricity and it's not so terrific. Am I right? I mean, without mentioning names, but.
that's why certain people have longevity. I mean, you know, it's like
just that amazing. Funny or what? Without mentioning name, you can start name dropping. I'm going to start picking up some quarters off the floor. Good.
Is there?
Right, we got to wrap it up, Dan. We're at 8 o'clock.
Let's Ray's dying to ask one last question.
Have you done a lot of duets, Taylor? And if so, who are you the most excited to get to sing with?
No, I write songs. I don't necessarily write duets. I mean,
performed a duet with anyone that was like so thrilling? I know some people. Paul Schaefer had said he was so excited to perform with James Brown. So, is there anyone that you perform with? You were like, oh my god, I'm performing with whomever.
Well, I wrote a song that Tina Turner recorded. I think I'd be damn excited.
Wow.
If we sang that together, my god. Wow.
Well, maybe you could sing Islands in the Stream sometime with Noam at the Olive.
Sing with Dan. Dan loves to sing duets. Or Summer Lovin' from Greece, Dan. That's one of your karaoke favorites.
Paradise by the Dashboard Lights is my
favorite. Oh, that's a good one.
That's my karaoke duet.
I've had the pleasure of singing with Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins. I mean, more than the pleasure. Michael was I love singing with Michael McDonald more than life itself, Kenny Loggins.
I was a huge Loggins and Messina fan.
I sang with Meek, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Smokey Robinson, What a Dream.
Oh, wow.
Cyndi Lauper, I've had the privilege.
Well, Taylor, they all have
the privilege. I've had many privileges in my life, many, many joyful moments.
They all had the privilege to sing with you.
And as well. But you asked me, so
yeah,
I said,
I know.
I've had this marvelous privilege, Boys to Men, Travis Tritt. Just incredible times.
And Daniel Elliott Natterman.
Well, we didn't sing together. I sang the na 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 part.
That counts.
Exactly. That's one of the greatest, perhaps certainly amongst the greatest I don't even know how you would call it, in songs where they just sing like, you know, like with Hey Jude, like na 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 na, you know, na 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 na.
So
like.
No.
Songs have
na 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 na.
Yeah,
the whole category of songs with that na na na, and
it is a na na. Yeah,
so that's one of the best na nas, I think.
Na 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 na.
Oh yeah.
So why don't we just sum up Taylor's, credits or plugs or whatever? She's got her book out called
Tell It to My Heart: How I Lost My Shit, Conquered My Fear, and Found My Voice.
There's nothing like a good musician memoir. They're almost always interesting because who lives a more interesting life than a musician? And
my mother.
By the way, you look fantastic.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you, honey.
I mean,
you're very kind. Did I tell you to fuck off once before? I take it all back. I can take it back. I have the power to take it back. I said it in a Bette Midler way. So here we go. We take it all back.
At some point, everybody is
Vivian. As soon as we get hang up here, what's that?
At some point, everyone's told Noam to fuck off, and they take it back.
And also,
no, but I said it about Vivian, and he knows it's Cafe Watt. Doesn't count. And many of those people are off on tour with somebody else.
It's for your personal appearances. Is there a place, a website, or a place that one can find out where Taylor is coming? Will she be?
Of course, it's
COVID.
It's all the tour. It's COVID. It is postponed, and it's all that. But yes, of course. I think September in Pennsylvania might still go. We're hopeful. But yeah, but my new single comes out, please, and you can check that out. Look at my websites. But please, and Joanne will give you all that too. So Norm, make sure you check that out too. The new single comes out July 8th. Please, it's looking hot.
So Norm, TaylorDane.com, I guess, is the place. The clear for all things Taylor Dane.
D-A-Y-N-E for all you porn star lovers. It's not D-A-N-E.
Oh, is there a porn star?
You know why he's laughing? Because there was a porn star, D-A-Y-N-E. Oh, yeah, D-A-N-E. Yes. I'm not D-A-N-E. I'm D-A-Y-N-E. Like a day. A day.
So just also to our listeners, you can send us suggestions, comments, critiques at podcast@comedyseller.com. And Perielle, what's our Instagram?
At Live From The Table.
And that's it. Thank you, Taylor, for joining us.
Thank you. Aww, thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Aruba Ray. For
thank you.
Thanks, Ray. This was fun.
Great to see you again, Taylor. I love it.
I can't believe you're going to Aruba. Say hi to the folks there.
Come down, please.
Maybe I will when you let me know it's like A-OK.
Okay.
I have to do work in Miami. Like, it looks like I sold the apartment, so.
Oh, wow.
When you come to New York, come to Comedy Cellar.
And I'm going to go to... Yeah. Sorry, we're taking care of
a lot of invitations, Taylor, but Noam just added to it with the Olive Tree Cafe.
Come to the Comedy Cellar.
the Comedy Cellar or Olive Tree Cafe, and all food items half price for Taylor Day.
Unbelievable. We'll just work our way through the Caribbean too. Why not?
So we'll see y'all next time on Live from the Table. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.